Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today's show, it's the Copyright Forum. To answer your questions, I have a great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is an intellectual property lawyer and writer in the Berkshires. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues and writes a column for Metroland. Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators and a professional member and past president of the Association of Medical Illustrators. Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio and maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com. You're invited to give us a call right now, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop, or comment on our Facebook page. It's WAMC Radio, and there'll be a Vox Pop post there. Or you can tweet us at WAMC Radio. Just use the hashtag Vox Pop, or email voxpop@wamc.org. Got all that? If you don't, just remember the number. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number, and we will get to your calls momentarily. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, Polly Law, you know, we're in the studio waiting to go on, and I keep hearing all this chatter about orphan works, and everybody is wringing their hands. What on earth is the problem?
Go, Paul.
Well, see, I'm going to go first, and then these two are going to disagree
okay.
with me.
That's right.
Oh, I like that. That's great.
Orphan works refers to works that, you know, you that are out there, and you don't know who the author is, and you might know who the author is, but you don't know if there's copyright coverage on the work. And it's caused a problem, especially since 1923. Anything that's published, you have to presume has copyright coverage, even though the vast majority of it doesn't. And stuff's because of the change of the law, stuff that was created after 1978, everything is covered by copyright. Everything that anybody creates is covered by copyright. Not that most people care about their copyrights. And so what has happened is there's all this uncertainty. If you want to use stuff that you find out there, that you find on the internet or film archives or old books, if you want to reuse them for any purpose, you really can't, because you don't know for most of these works whether or not there's copyright protection attached to them. And it's been referred to as the 20th century black hole of culture, because all this stuff is just sitting there and people are afraid to use it. And the Copyright Office just issued, you know, yet another study advocating a situation where people can use orphan works without fear of having someone show up and, you know, sue them and taking their house away. This has been bouncing around for as long as we've been coming here, and we've talked about it a number of times. And so the Copyright Office made a very strong recommendation a month ago, and apparently it's in Congress again. And so who knows whether anything will happen. But, you know, this started Polly. I didn't know any of this was going on. Polly sent me from an Illustrators Association.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of these like almost hysterical, you know, they're coming to take our copyrights away. But the thing is, illustrators and photographers especially are vulnerable, because their works are out there usually without any kind of indicia of attribution. You see an illustration and there's no name attached to it. And there's no way to find out, or there's no real easy way to find out whether there's a copyright owner.
Well, that's the key, though. There's no easy way to find out. But if you're going to use it, isn't there a certain onus upon you to look and try to find out who the owner
correct.
Is?
Correct.
Yeah, that's where Bill and I kind of roll our eyes.
The recommendation says you have to make a diligent search to find.
But they have still not, at least in my reading of this, and I'm not all the way through it, they still have not defined what a diligent search is.
They're getting better at it.
Better
than it was 4 years ago.
Right, but they're relating a diligent search to works that are in some sort of registration. You know, they're talking about registration processes. And the problem is there are no registrations. You know, the other problem is, why should somebody be able to take my work, even if they do a diligent search, and reuse it? Because they can create another work from my work, a derivative. They can then copyright that and monetize my work for which I get no money.
Also,
this is how I make my living.
Yeah. Also, you know, a diligent search, that's the kind of a loophole that corporations can drive a truck through. You know, they say, oh, we looked, we did a 30-second search, and we searched all the databases in Latvia, and we couldn't find it. Therefore, you know, we should be able to use it.
What?
And it also takes control of the usage of the work away from the artist. If the proposed changes to the Copyright Act go through, say I do an image, and someone, after doing, you know, a 30-second search, can't figure out that I did it, and they use it for something that I philosophically can't support, the court would say under this new regulation that, well, you know, you'll get paid for it. It doesn't matter whether you would normally have allowed this company or this organization to use your work. You're getting paid for it. What's the beef?
Well, and the payment, though, is going to be a quote-unquote reasonable fee that the buyer and seller would have arrived at prior to the infringement.
Yeah.
Again, you can drive three large trucks through that.
This sounds like a real bonanza for intellectual property lawyers.
That's why God made intellectual property lawyers.
Ah!
But, you know,
cha-ching.
The thing is, I mean, scam searches, I mean, they'll get slammed down at some point, and especially big corporations pretending to do searches. And, you know, I mean, for you guys, you know, I feel for you because you do have valid points. But, I mean, things are bad now.
Yeah.
Things are, you know, you're getting ripped off now right and left, you know, anyways. And I don't know if this is going to make it that much worse. And it's, you know, it's a whole different thing for, like, film archives. I mean, the biggest advocates for this law are documentary filmmakers who find all this film all over the place, have no idea where it came from, you know, and they can't make a documentary film that they want to with historic footage because they're,
like,
afraid.
That's like when Work Made for Hire was introduced in the 70s into the copyright law. That was promoted by encyclopedia publishers.
And movie makers.
And how can we figure out how much royalty we should pay to someone who writes a one-paragraph article as opposed to someone who writes a three-page article? We can't do it. It's too difficult.
Well, I got a feeling that this conversation could go on and on,
probably
for several rounds of drinks, but let's go to the phone.
It has.
1-800-348-2551. Christopher in Albany. Christopher, you're on.
Hi, how you doing? Thank
Good.
You for taking my call. I just had a quick question, actually. It's actually three parts. What I did is I opened up a company, an LLC, and I went right ahead and I had an image that I had posted for trademark. It's already established. I paid all the money and everything is already. But my question is now, in this image, is it possible that if I was, is it only this exactly trademarked image that's being protected?
Yes.
The reason why I'm asking is that specifically is because I have different variations and I have different images within that image that I also wanted to protect. But I wasn't exactly sure about how it's going to look on the label. So what I did is I went through and I kind of made a collage, as you would say. And I put all different sorts of images. It's not the exact image that I would like to use. I'm afraid I basically wasted my money.
Well, you know, you're protected for your image or any image that's for which there's a likelihood of confusion. So it's something that's similar enough that people will be confused.
Okay.
And that's your range of protection. But
okay.
if you think the ultimate image you're going to use is different than the one that you have registered, you know, I would wait till one settles in that you know you're going to keep and register that one. That would be the best thing to do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let me ask this question while I'm out here too. See, now I have inside this image. All right. Let me just give you the rundown of it.
All right, briefly.
Not too much, yeah.
That'd be great.
So basically, it's a shepherd in the mountains, okay? I have a picture of mountains I got off from one website. I have a picture of a shepherd that I had photoshopped that put it in there. This shepherd is the image that I'd be able to, like, use. Now, since I made this collage, like I told you, in a sense, and trademarked that, can I take that individual shepherd out of this image and use that separately not necessarily being able to put the trademark next to that, because obviously the only image that can be used that trademark symbol is the actual image that's submitted. But can I use part of that without having to worry if anyone's going to be able to take that piece of the image and use that?
Okay, we have 45 seconds for an answer until break. So go ahead,
thank
panel.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, this sidesteps the question of whether you had the right to use the image of the shepherd in the
I
first place.
I do have the right to use the image.
Okay.
I do.
Okay.
Yes.
I think I think the answer is generally yes. You know, I think the component parts are going to be protected as well as the whole. Yep.
Great.
Bill, you have anything more you want to add? Okay. No, Christopher, I think I'm sorry to say you're done. I was going to ask Bill if he had anything.
Sure. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the call. Off to a flying start here. It is the Copyright Forum on WAMC. It's Vox Pop, don't you know? 1-800-348-2551. We'll be back.
Support comes from Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years, BoydenAndPerrin.com. Old Castle Theater Group, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting Cabaret the Musical, the story of pre-World War II Berlin nightlife at the Kit Kat Club, July 10th through August 2nd. OldCastleTheater.org for tickets. Ye Olde Warwick Bookshop, Warwick, New York, a Hudson River Valley bookseller specializing in new and vintage books, plus collectibles and curiosities. Open 7 days a week, yeoldwarwickbookshop.com. Habitat Post & Beam, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, designing and manufacturing energy-efficient post & beam homes and additions throughout the Northeast since 1972. Postandbeam.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing. CareersInTransitionLLC.com. And Fleury Lumber, Route 10, East Hampton, Massachusetts, providing advice and assistance for projects large or small, decking needs from Trex composite to hardwoods such as mahogany and ipe. Offering delivery, FleuryLumber.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Yeah, the Copyright Forum is here. Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law join us, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. The lines are loaded, so if you hear somebody hang up, that's your cue to call, 1-800-348-2551. Okay, Joseph in Northfield, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, folks.
Hello.
Hi. I have a hopefully simpler scenario to ask feedback on. I want to write a memoir of an individual who was a spiritual mentor from England, about whom a video was made some years ago in which personal photographs appeared from his youth, perhaps the 1920s. These are not creative works by the technical definition of creative, but my question is, may those images safely be extracted for publication in the book without special accommodations?
Well, a photograph is considered a creative work.
Yeah, the bar is very low for copyright purposes in terms of what's considered creative. Do you know who holds the rights to those images?
Well, these are family photos of that individual's family, which were then used for the video I mentioned.
But who produced the video, I guess, is what I'm aiming at.
Oh, the video was created by one of his students.
Well, it's kind of tricky because you don't know whether, you know, anyone cares about the copyrights to these photographs. Is there an archive? Do you know where the original photographs are?
I haven't gone that far into it.
Yeah. You might want to contact the family and see, because that would be, I think, the most fail-safe thing to do. You know, if you're just going to take screenshots off the video, you could get in some trouble maybe with the video company, although I doubt it. But
or whoever created the video. He said it was a student that created the video.
Right.
So would it matter that the photos hail from the 1920s and might themselves be out of copyright?
They might be, but if they've never been published, if they're family snapshots, depending on who took them, there still might be some existing copyright.
They were published in the video.
In the video.
Right. And the video, theoretically, the video producer would have some ownership rights to that video. So if you're pulling stuff off the video, wouldn't that run?
Is there any notification at the end of the video, like thanking the family for the use of the photographs or anything like that?
No, he was himself a family friend, so I'm sure they just lent him that material.
Yeah. I'm tempted to say go ahead and do it.
I would, if it were me, I would at least try to contact the family members and at least get their tacit okay.
Right.
You know.
So in general, then, you're saying that video material, even if it's not sourced by the person who publishes it, can still be copyrighted by that person.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for the feedback.
Right. Thanks a lot for the call. You want to add something?
No, but I think if he gets permission of the family, if he took screen grabs from the video, he's going to be fine. You know.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go over to David in Johnstown. David, you're on.
Hi. Can you, you know, if you're going to copyright a song, you usually write it out and send it in. But are people sending in CDs and having it translated down in Washington?
Oh, yes. You could take any kind of recording, MP3s. I mean, I typically, when I register songs, compositions, and recordings, which are two different copyrights, I just email them an MP3. Yeah. And
but they don't transcribe the music, though.
No,
and they don't keep it either. They don't.
Yeah,
they
say they do, but they don't. But yeah, you don't need to have sheet music. It doesn't have to be transcribed.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, you could just hum into a tape recorder and send that down. Here's my melody, and that would suffice.
With the typewritten lyrics, maybe.
Not necessarily. No.
Can you imagine? Do you know who the congressman that in charge of the Library of Congress is?
There's not one congressman.
It's a committee.
It's a committee. The Judiciary Committee, I believe.
Yeah, the Judiciary Committee.
Maria Palante, though,
is the Register of Copyrights.
Register of Copyrights. Yeah.
But they seem to be submerged in a lot of material, and it takes forever to get a... Have you noticed?
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah.
But once you send it, you're covered, right?
Yes.
I guess so.
Yeah. Yeah. If your application is proper.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, David.
You're welcome.
I appreciate the call. Of course, now, as I understand what you were talking about earlier, once you create it, you're really fine. But then you would need a copyright attorney to...
No, you can register it yourself. It needs to be registered for full protection.
And what is the difference between partial protection and full protection?
Well, partial protection means that if somebody infringes your work and you have not registered it, that all you can possibly hope, underscored, capital letters, to collect from them is a reasonable license fee for what you would have charged for the work. The reality is if they tell you to go fly a kite, the most you can do is hire Paul, spend a lot of money. But even then, the courts are not going to award you more than a reasonable license fee.
And you'd have to pay the attorney's fees. But
right.
If you register the work with the
Thank
Copyright
you.
Office, you can then sue the infringer for your attorney fees.
Plus, the limits go for a non-willful infringement to $30,000 per infringement. And for, did I say non-willful?
Yeah.
And for a willful infringement, up to $150,000 plus your attorney's fees. So you can see there's a huge difference.
Okay. Let's go over to Steve in South Cambridge. Steve, you're on.
Okay. Good afternoon. My question is about how best to archive a historical documentary. A friend and I produced earlier this year. The reason for doing it was to serve posterity. So we're hoping that, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, people can find all the work we did. Any suggestions?
Well, that's a real question, because they're finding that even works that were made 30 years ago, there are no machines left that can play them.
Yeah, I'm familiar with
formats.
That technological aspect. Yep.
So technologically, boy, they're, you know... They're saying you need to have like six different formats saved. As far as archiving, there are services out there that will archive things for you.
And how would I find them?
I would do a Google search.
And what words would you type in?
Video archives.
Video archives?
Video archiving services.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve. We appreciate it. It's the Copyright Forum on WAMC, Vox Pop. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp. And let's go to Daniel in North Adams. Daniel.
Hi, everyone. I just had a question. It's kind of a two-part question. So I'm a software developer, and I'm working on an app. And my first question is, how do you copyright an app? Like, I know the whole thing where people say, you know, you can email it to yourself, and it's automatically copyrighted, but I'd rather...
Please don't do that. Please don't do that.
Don't even waste the few little bits.
The electrons.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think you can get two different registrations for your app. One is for the code, and you can just register the code as a... The copyright considers code to be a creative work. I'm not sure that they're right, but if you go to copyright.gov, it will tell you, you know, what they need to see in terms of registering code. And then you can also register the look and feel of the app, which is basically all the screenshots that you can take of the app, and you can register that as a literary or a visual work. And that way you'll be totally covered, I think.
Really? That's awesome. And one last question. So when I was working on the app, there were a lot of, like, online forums that I went to when I was having issues with finding out, like, what was wrong with my code. And there was a lot of people, like, on the online forums who would post, like, you know, their fixes and little snippets of code that would help stuff. And I'm like, can I copyright that when I use their snippets of code? Like, what extent is it that I can't use what someone else wrote? I mean, I know they're posting it to help other people, but it's not like they wrote, like, you know, they gave you a license for it. I mean,
right. I mean, you're talking about almost like an open source kind of endeavor, which is, you know, sometimes a good way to go, particularly in the software area. You can have your work tweaked for free. But I think basically, you know, even if you're using other people's ideas in your code, what you are really registering is the totality of the code and not necessarily the individual little algorithms inside it.
Oh, okay. That sounds cool. All right. I think that's everything. I appreciate you guys' help.
Thanks, Daniel. We appreciate it. Now, of course, a lot of people create apps using online services. There are several out there. So I wonder what level of ownership you would have of the code for an app if you're using one of these services where they basically say,
create the app,
here's
for
the
you.
Back end, just type in what you need.
Yeah.
Well, they have terms of service, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't looked into that, but you probably don't get much. You know, if the program is writing the code for you, you're just telling it what the functionality is. You would probably get the look and feel at the end of the day.
But it might be good to read those terms closely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, let's go over to Adam in Rhinebeck. Adam, you're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
I'm feeling buzz because my wife has recently developed a line of, like, skincare soaps and things like that. What different levels of protection does she need for process and recipe?
You're not going to get any.
Really?
No.
Yep, because they're considered instructions and processes which are not subject to copyright. I told this to a young woman about 20 years ago that her recipes were getting picked up and were circulating around the web, and she was furious. And I said, there's nothing I can do for you.
Yeah, but these are skincare products, right?
Well, skincare products, but the same thing. And, you know, it was the only conversation I ever had with Rachel Ray.
Oh. I was going to ask if that's who that was.
How about that?
But what I think what she needs to do is not share those recipes with anyone. That's known as trade secrets.
Okay. Is there an ingredients list? Is that, again, when you do that kind of stuff, you have to list your ingredients so people can.
Adam, your connection is very poor. Can you try standing on a phone book or something?
Sorry about that. Looking at, if she has to post ingredients lists and things like that, if they can deconstruct that, is that protectable?
What? No.
No.
That's just information. and it's required by the government. What the ingredients list doesn't tell you, however, is the concentrations and the processes. Right.
It depends. You know, it depends on what the EPA or the FDA or whoever regs are. I have a very close personal friend who just came out with some insect repellent, and we looked it up, and you do have to list the ingredients and the percentages according to federal law. And so you should check that out before you go to market.
Adam, thanks a lot for the call. But what about, like, the famous Coke recipe?
Well, that's a trade secret.
But you have to list everything on the bottle, right?
Yeah, but you don't list the concentrations, and you don't list the process.
Yeah, for food, I guess it's probably different, isn't it?
Right.
And you'll notice that very often they say selected flavorings,
right.
Natural flavorings. They don't list the flavorings.
Yeah, okay. Heinz ketchup.
Delicious. Let's go to Monel in Woodstock. You're on.
Hi. My late mother created some radio and television programs for some local stations, and I don't know whether she was paid or not. And I'm wondering if I have the right to put them on YouTube, or if the family owns the rights, or if the stations do. I've contacted one station and gotten no response.
It really all depends on the contracts that she had at the time with the station.
Yeah, if she was an employee of the station, then the station probably owns the show. If she was, you know, a volunteer or some kind of independent contractor, she might well own the rights.
If there's no written agreement.
Yeah, but, you know, if it's historical shows, I would put them on the air on YouTube. I mean, why would the station have an interest in taking them down? You know,
good question.
You know, and I would just go ahead and do it. And
how old are the shows?
They're pretty old.
So are they kinescopes?
Yeah, I mean, decades old.
Are they videotapes or kinescopes? What do you have there?
How old? I have videotapes and audio tapes.
Oh, okay. So we're
An interview of Pete Seeger, for instance. That's an audio tape. But his family might object. I don't know.
Oh, I doubt it. He wasn't really big on intellectual property rights, as we discussed with Alan here. So, yeah, I think these things have historical import, and I think it's important to put them on.
Hey, thanks for this great call. Okay. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's the Copyright Forum. Bill Westwood, Polly Law, and Paul Rapp here with yours truly, Ray Graff, Jason, and Amherst. Jason.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Thanks for the wonderful panel. I'm a musician, an author, and I also have a small company. There a couple of things came up earlier in your discussion about licensing of musical works or other works, and I had the peculiar experience of discovering that a piece of mine has been licensed by a television program without the program actually contacting me, and if they had contacted me, I would have refused them the right to use my work. How does that process actually work? Is that willful sort of neglect of licensing if a company doesn't actually contact them?
Is your work registered?
It is, yeah. And I have it's registered through the copyright agency, but also through ASCAP. I'm a member of ASCAP as both a publisher and an author.
Well, you know, in order to sync your work into a video, they're supposed to contact you and get a license, and you have every right to say no. I mean, it's common practice for television shows often to just grab stuff and wait for somebody to come to them. And that's not right, you know. Like you said, this was something that you wouldn't have wanted your music associated with to begin with. So I would contact them and tell them you want your licensing fee and tell them you want the thing taken off. You know, any further broadcasts of the show.
And if they give you a hard time, I have two words for you, Jason: call Paul.
I have a couple friends that work in the entertainment legal industry, and they've basically said that, you know, you'd be able to recover licensing fees pretty easily, but on a more kind of ethical, moral level, I was just wondering if it's possible to actually say no to another company.
Absolutely.
It's your work.
That's what copyright's all about, controlling who and how your work is used.
Is it a long piece of music, 30 seconds, a minute, something like that?
It's a few minutes long, the particular piece that was used,
So they used the whole thing?
I still don't know exactly if the whole thing was used. I discovered this based on royalty statements that were provided to me, and
it was kind of a complicated story, but it was actually used outside of the United States. So another foreign royalties company was reporting this and through ASCAP to me.
I really would suggest that you contact an attorney to pursue this, because they're going to make the work disappear, and you're not going to have any proof that they used it. And I've been involved in a lot of litigations and over copyright, and I would recommend you do that.
Okay. And okay. Jason, thanks a lot. Now, what about the struggling musician who doesn't have a dime to his name to pay for a lawyer?
But if he's registered his work, lawyer is
still got to pay Paul.
No.
He works for free now.
No.
Certainly on this program he does.
But the person who infringed on his work, the production company, will pay Paul.
Eventually.
Well, actually, they'll settle real quick.
Yeah.
And if he's registered before the infringement.
Right.
You know.
Because they're looking at the potential for $30,000 to $150,000, so they'll work out a settlement.
Yeah. Okay, let's take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's the Copyright Forum on Vox Pop. We'll be back.
Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, announcing the second annual Francis Day, honoring museum's namesake Francis Young Tang. Saturday, July 11th, noon to 5 p.m., skidmore.edu/tang for details. Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, for summer blooming plants, perennials, trees, and shrubs, including deer-resistant varieties, plus the We Plan, You Plant design service and gardening advice. Whitney'sFarm.com. Curtis Lumber, specializing in kitchen design featuring Cambria quartz countertops, Murillat cabinetry, and more. Designer consultations available, CurtisLumber.com. Upstate Divorce Mediation, specializing in helping couples who are seeking a legal separation or divorce. Offices in Albany, Saratoga, and Catskill. UpstateDivorceMediation.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair services, and 24-hour towing and recovery service for over 30 years. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And the Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, the Copyright Forum, and here comes the home stretch with Paul Rapp, Bill Westwood, and Polly Law. And you, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Let's go to Israel in Williamstown. You're on.
Hey, one quick question and one slightly more complicated question. The complicated question first. I'm a playwright, screenwriter, director, and I've done a play about Pierre Bonnard, and a very key image is that I want to project on stage is a painting by Pierre Bonnard from the 1930s, and the owner is anonymous. Whenever I found the image, it's been impossible to actually find the owner. Who owns the copyright? Does the owner of the painting own the copyright, or does Pierre Bonnard's estate?
No, it's the owner of the photograph of the painting owns the copyright to it.
Well, the heirs of the painter too.
Yeah.
And the photograph isn't going to own very much, if any. But I would contact the heirs of the painter and see what you can, if you can find them, and see if
you really can't find them. It's
Israel, can you turn your radio down just a little bit? We're hearing
us. I can, sorry.
We sound terrific, but it would be good if we didn't. All right.
Okay, so and I also want to make a film based on this play, so it's something that I really have to clarify.
When you see images of this painting, does it list a museum that it is in?
No, they keep it completely anonymous. It's privately owned. It's not in a museum. Somewhere, somebody in Europe. somewhere in Europe owns the painting.
Well, they own the physical painting, but they may not own the copyright. Maybe it's in the maybe
yeah. Well,
for
the
copyright purposes
copyright,
is in public domain.
Is the copyright not lifetime plus 75 years? Is that international?
Not if it was done in the 30s.
In the 30s, he may not have registered it.
That's what I'm
all,
saying. It may
know,
have fallen into the public domain.
You just don't know. So, you know, getting clearance from the family is probably the best thing to do. The other thing to do is just go ahead and run with it. But, you know, investors doing their due diligence aren't going to be happy about that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to want to have some kind of certainty. What country was he from?
France.
France.
He's from France?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, considering that France is kind of the home of copyright.
Well, and there's also the issue of moral rights in France,
yeah,
which could create a problem.
Yeah, which are different,
right,
obviously, from here. So it remains a complex question.
I would open a conversation with the curator for the appropriate time period. For paintings of the appropriate time period, I would contact the Louvre, and you know they may be able to, or the Dorsay. Okay.
Yeah, I will do that. That's a great idea.
And maybe they can find out the information for you.
That is a good
great
idea.
That's a really good idea.
All right, thanks. Israel. Thanks
okay,
a lot.
Here's this simple question. There's a myth among playwrights that if you mail a copy of your
no
here we go
the answer is Israel the answer is simply no, it is not legal, it's not effective. Don't waste your time or energy thinking about it.
So you actually have to register with the copyright office.
Correct.
Yes. copyright.gov.
thanks Israel, we appreciate the call. Now if he does his due diligence and this orphan work thing law that you're talking about goes through, then if he tries for a while and does his best and then decides to use it anyway, it's okay?
Then it would be okay if a copyright owner came up, then they would be bound to a reasonable market license fee.
And he should keep a log of his efforts.
Everything he's done, yeah.
Okay.
So he can prove that he tried his best.
But those rules are not in effect yet.
No.
All
right, let's go to Umberto in Albany. You're on.
Hello?
Umberto, are you there? Okay, well, goodbye. Let's go to Marie in Newburgh. Marie, you're on.
Hi. Is this hopeless? If you don't have an agent to sell songs that you've written, is that a bad thing? I have written a few things that I want to send to people I think would be good, and I don't know whether that's smart or not. I haven't registered them yet, so I'm thinking, you know, do I really need an agent? Because right away I'll be paying out money without getting any money back.
I mean,
I don't know the process. The procedure to use if I've done some songs that I want other people to sing. And then do I do a CD of them? Or do I do just the piano background and they still let me sing in their way? I mean, you know, they'll have to interpret it in their way. I don't care what the interpretation of the song would be, just that the words are there with the melody.
You know, I think your idea of sending the works to artists that you think the songs are appropriate for is the right thing to do, and you don't need an agent to do that. I would definitely register the copyrights before I send them out, and mm-hmm. I would simply make the best recording that you can make. I mean, recording technology is so ubiquitous right now that there's no such thing as a demo quality recording anymore in terms of the music industry.
You haven't heard mine, obviously. That's fine.
But you know, you can in your home make a very professional sounding recording if you master the technology. And I would just make the most simple, unadorned, but professional sounding recording you can, and then let them rip.
And you can register a whole passel of your songs all for one registration fee. You don't have to register each of them separately.
Okay, so I register all of them in one, send them to as many people as I think would like it.
Well, you can then send individual recordings of songs from this group mm-hmm. to different people. Yeah.
Okay, and how do you get through to Madonna?
What?
Oh, I don't have her number
no.
with me. I'm sorry.
I think she's in a retirement home somewhere, actually. Maybe at a bingo game. Hey, Marie.
Okay.
Thanks
Thank
a lot
you.
For the call. We appreciate it. Over to Mark in North Bennington, Vermont. Mark.
Hi. I'm an architect, and I'm calling because I've had, you know, 25 to 30 years of work now that is on AutoCAD and that's in, you know, files. And I have a partner. We have a – our firm is a corporation, and I have never copyrighted any of my work. Can I do it all at once, and is it wise?
I think you have copyrighted it. It's since 1978, whatever you created is automatically copyrighted. What you haven't done is you haven't registered it with the Copyright
Correct.
Office.
Yeah, and I think for architectural plans, I mean, you're making one set of plans to make the building, so you're not really publishing the work. So I think you can probably register all of them with one with one application.
It'd be worth a try. All they if they don't like it, they'll turn you down.
I see. And, you know, the work is certainly not just plans. It's each project is a whole litany of drawings. Mm-hmm. And then here's the second piece to the question. When we do a project, there are engineers involved, both for mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and structural work, and sometimes civil engineering, too, for site work. If that drawing that is done by those people wants to be part of this as well, do I simply need permission from those engineers?
I would not include those works. I would just include the things that you worked on, especially, you know, drawings of the elevations and things like that. Because otherwise, it's slipping over into information.
Yeah, you're getting into purely functional. I mean, and there have been a lot of cases about technical drawings where people try to get copyright protection, and they determine that basically it's a purely functional drawing, and there's no, you know, the kind of creativity that copyright protects is not present in a highly technical drawing like that. Or if it is, there's very little.
But what about something like the Eiffel Tower? And you have technical drawing, you come up with something remarkable and novel, and you have all the technical drawings for that. Clearly, there's some intellectual property there,
right?
Well,
that might fall into a patent if they're like a new joint was developed or a new way of doing it.
Well, no, but it's a decorative, you know, a decorative work. The more decorative it is, the more protection it's going to get. You know, I just was involved with a case with an architect who was doing sort of, you know, run-of-the-mill colonial houses, running around suing everybody else that was building run-of-the-mill colonial houses. And it took a while, but finally the court said, you know, there's really not that many ways to make a colonial house.
Right.
And you're, you know, you don't have enough uniqueness in your plans to get any kind
and
of protection.
And you didn't invent it.
Right.
Now, if you make a cape and you call it a colonial, then you might have something.
There you go.
All right, let's go to Umberto again. You're there now, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on.
Okay, I am a composer, and I have a song that I have registered with the Library of Congress in Washington, and then I tried to become a member of the ASCAP.
Uh-huh.
However, they have denied the membership because I've been a member with another organization for years from Italy that is called the CIAE, S-I-A-E.
Right.
So because most of my work was always written in Italian, and I have received money from Italy because the songs were distributed, sold in Italy, you know. So now I decided to dedicate my work to the American area here. I mean, here in America, and so they are denying my membership because I still have the membership there, and they said that you can only have one, you can only be part of one organization.
Right. I think you should stick with the Italian organization, and I'm sure they collect, you know, all of these organizations in different countries they all collect for each other. So I would contact the Italian Performing Rights Organization and ask them, you know, how they collect American-based royalties, and or if they do, and I'm sure that they do. And then you're fine you know, you'll get the same level of royalty coverage by registering it with the Italian organization that you've been with for years.
Well, yes, I understand what you're saying, but at the same time, I did make a decision, and I canceled my membership with the CI.
Oh.
But not till the end of the year they will release me. So my
right.
question is this. You know that the musicians, once in a while, they come up with a good song
yeah.
that you are very confident it can be like a good one. And so now I'm afraid to do something with this song, even though it's copyrighted, because of the fact that I cannot join, like I cannot be part of the ASCAP or the BMI to protect my royalty, you know. So do you think I should wait until the end of the year? That's my question. Or should I just do it anyway, regardless of the fact that I'm going to be a member at the end of the year when the CI is going to release me?
I would go ahead and let it go, because the performing rights royalties are only one of, you know, any number of streams of income that a song can get. And It's only going to benefit you if you wind up on the radio or on television, and it may take that long for that to happen. It may take till the end of the year if you've just got a composition. I mean, it's got to get recorded and it's got to get distributed and all the rest. So, you know, I would continue to try to exploit the song, and just make sure that you get on board with ASCAP at the end of the year when they let you in.
Umberto, thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Steve in Westfield, Mass. Steve.
Hi. Love the show. Lots of great information. Thank you.
Thank you.
My question is, my uncle wrote and copyrighted a college textbook. He wishes upon his death to pass the textbook to me to market. What legal things do I need to do to transfer the copyright to me, or do I need to?
Your relative needs to put it into his will
okay.
that you inherit the copyright.
Yeah, okay. Not just the right to market, but he should explicitly say the copyright.
Transfer the copyright
yeah,
to you.
Because otherwise, if he doesn't mention the copyright explicitly, it may get distributed to all of his heirs, you know, like there was no will at all. So
right.
I think make sure you explicitly say the word copyright in there, and then you'll be good to go.
And the title of the textbook.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. All right. Well, Steve, thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Over to Jerry we go. Jerry, we only have about a minute and a half here. Go ahead.
I'll be very quick. I'm a commercial photographer. I created a photograph. Several photographs of Maria Callas in 1958, and I was well compensated. I've noticed that on the internet, they are now advertising these record albums with my cover. Do I have any recourse?
What did you have a contract at the time?
Yes, at the time I did.
And the contract stated what about the ownership of the rights?
Were you paid flat fee, or were you to get a royalty?
No, I got a flat fee, but as the CD changed, I got royalties.
Hmm. And panel, you have 20 seconds. Go.
But is this the same CD, or are they using your image on a new CD?
No, these are all the same CDs.
Okay.
That I was originally paid for.
But that then you later started to get royalties for?
I got royalties up to a certain point, yes.
Hmm. That's a legal precedent.
Huh. Yeah.
Well, we're out of time.
I would ask him why you're not still getting royalties.
Yeah,
I mean,
contact
I'm curious.
Him.
There's some facts in here that I don't think we know. But
that is correct.
But if you were getting royalties for a while and they stopped and they're still using it, I would ask him.
I would, if it were I would contact an attorney and speak to an attorney.
Jerry, thanks a lot for the call. That's it, panel. Boy, you did a great job today. What a fun show. Support comes from Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake, serving local grass-fed beef, Milwaukee hot dogs and sausages, beer-battered fish fry, and handmade milkshakes, PiratesLakesideGrill.com. the Center for Extended Care on University Drive in Amherst, a family-owned and operated nursing center offering rehab, long-term care, and Alzheimer's specialty care, CECAA.com. The 1850 House and Tavern, Rosendale, New York, a neighborhood tavern with a waterfront deck and a porch on Main Street, microbrew beers, local spirits, and pizza from their clay oven, the 1850house.com. And SPAC presenting the National Ballet of China, performing the Peony Pavilion Wednesday evening, July 22nd, and date night with pre-performance music, food, wine, and beer tastings, sponsored by the Sage Colleges, SPAC.org for tickets. Thanks once again to Polly Law, Bill Westwood, and Paul Rapp for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Thanks to Susie Checkeye for answering the phones. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Another exciting episode of Vox Pop tomorrow, they tell me. The news is next.